Words are beautiful. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 194.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, 'cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublich Jr. here with you today, Tuesday, March 16th, 2021. Or, if you're a wrestling fan, this is a better known day as Austin 316 Day, because Austin 316 said so. We've got a great episode for you today. Today, it's a little different. I don't have a comedian as a guest. I have a poet. That's right, we're doing something a little different. I talked with a poet from North Africa. We had a wonderful conversation about the writing process and about poetry. Obviously, my guest goes by the alias of BIW, which stands for Beauty in Words. And it was a great conversation. So that's what's going to be coming up. I guarantee you're going to get something out of it, especially for writing. It was a very, very good conversation that we had. And we talked a little bit about comedy too, because as a writer, they were a fan of a comic that also does poetry. And that's a thing that a lot of comedians write poetry as well as jokes. We're very sensitive people. And so it was a good conversation. So that's what's coming up. Before we get to that, just want to remind everybody that redoing the Patreon. There's some great stuff on there. I'm releasing all the video content. And what I mean by that is the videos that I get when I do these episodes, it's only available on Patreon. I'll take little clips and snippets from it to put on YouTube, but the full episodes are available on the Patreon. That's Art of Bombing, patreon.com/artofbombingpod. You can also get the episodes ad-free, intro-free, all that jazz. If you don't want to listen to me babble for the first 5 minutes of the podcast, 5 to 10 minutes of the podcast, and you don't want to hear me do ads and things like that, you can go listen to it on the Patreon, and it's just the episode. It's unedited, just raw. There's nothing. I mean, it's, you know, edited, but not, you know, I don't take anything out. So if you want to do that, go check out the Patreon. Again, that's patreon.com, Art of Bombing. / Art of Bombing Pod. I can't even talk today, ladies and gentlemen. I can't even talk. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm excited because I have some live shows coming up. That could be. I got some live comedy shows coming up. March 20th, I will be in Gillette, Wyoming at Legends Bar. The show's at 7 p.m. Go check that out. If you are in Gillette, Wyoming, or you know somebody in Gillette, Wyoming, come see us at the show. It's going to be great. I get to go a little road trip with my good buddy Luke Johnson, who has been a guest on this podcast. He's opening for me, and it's going to be a good night. And then, if you're listening to this and you're in South Dakota, I will be at Boss's Comedy Club on March 21st at 7 p.m. That is an early show. It's a 7 p.m. show, and it is a Sunday show. I realize that it is Sunday, and people got to get ready for Monday to get ready for work, but it's an early show. 7 o'clock, the show will be over by 8:30, 9 at the latest, so you still have plenty of time to get home, get to bed, and it's a clean show, which means it's family-friendly. You can load up the family, come eat some pizza, watch some comedy. It's going to be a good time. So again, that's March 21st. In Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Boss's Comedy Club, 7 p.m. And if you haven't done so already, you should go visit the website. And while you're at the website checking things out, like, you know, while you go to the website to subscribe to the podcast, you can pick up a new push-back button. That's right. We've got buttons. You can get buttons when you go to the website. You can also get these buttons by subscribing to our Patreon feed. Another little shameless plug there. But the best way you can help this podcast, obviously, is to give us a 5-star rating, leave us a nice review, say some nice words about us, share the podcast with somebody, tell somebody about it. Word of mouth is the best type of marketing. So, you know, tell somebody. You know, there's a lot of comics, hang out with other comics. Maybe your comic buddy doesn't know about this podcast, so you should tell them about it. Helps us out. All right. Finally, if you enjoy live comedy and you're in the Twin Cities, I got to tell you about this great show that's coming up at the House of Comedy, Sergeant's Time. It's March 21st at 7 p.m. at the House of Comedy. Sergeant's Time is a comedy-based benefit show produced by Combat Creations. It's a veteran-owned production / media company out of Minnesota, and it's a fundraiser for the military, so for vets. The show features Terry Blues, William Spotted Bear, good friend of mine, Mitch Burrow, and it'll be hosted by Jonah Maddox, and it's, you know, and they're all military vets themselves, so that's cool. So it's a show for military vets by military vets, so it's a good thing. It's, like I said, it's a fundraiser, so it's for a good cause. It's comedy for a cause. You can get tickets at moa.houseofcomedy.net. All right, here's my conversation with the wonderful, talented poet, B.I.W. Enjoy.
I don't know if people on here, like, know what I do. I'm a poet. I'm a spoken word poet, an Instagram poet. Well, I just don't want my brain to be just that, like an Instagram poet, because people, when they hear that, they kind of like get pushed away by it. They don't take you seriously. Mm-hmm. But so I just like to say I'm a poet. I'm a writer as well. So yeah, originally I did think of being an anonymous poet, and that was inspired by the Instagram poet Atticus. I don't know if you know him. He's also a very popular Instagram poet, and he doesn't show his face. Mm-hmm. And when he does meet him, he just goes with a mask. So that I was inspired by that, and that, because I really value my privacy, I value privacy so much. It's crazy. So on one hand, I want to go on stage. On one hand, I want to go on stage. I want to perform. But on the other hand, I'm like, I have to show my face. Like I can't show my face. So at the beginning, I like didn't show my face at all. But then as time passed, I was like, okay, maybe I should open up a little bit. So I started posting. The thing that got me to post my face was the art versus artist challenge. I don't know if you're aware of it, but like every, I don't know when, maybe April, but like every April on Instagram, like artists, like they show their art, like a collage of their art.
Oh, okay.
And then they show a selfie of themselves. And it's my favorite trend. I don't do trends, but that's my favorite one. So like, and it's such a cool, because it's not illustration and it's illustration. It's not a painter anything. It's art. So like anything. So it's the only artistic challenge that I can put, because I post poems on Instagram that I can put there. So I put like my poems and then I put my face. So, and yeah, people know what I look like.
Well, that's awesome. No, I mean, I get that though, valuing privacy, and especially in entertainment and art of any sort, it's definitely important, because it's good to have boundaries, because, you know, you see, there's a lot of times, you see it a lot with celebrities where, you know, suddenly they have these weird stalkers trying to break into their houses and whatever, and, you know, and so, and it's definitely...
It becomes even bigger when they have families, like children and stuff. Like, I don't know if you, I'm not a really big fan of pop culture. Something I saw like lately shocked me. Sorry, I can't speak. Something shocked me. I don't know if you're familiar, but like Nicki Minaj, like had a baby. She had a child, and she posted like only a couple of pictures of him. And then it went viral. Someone like photoshopped her baby, him skinnier, or she, I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, but like they took out his cheeks or his like figure, and it went viral, and people were shocked, and people were like, it's, I got like, why would you do that? It's just a baby. Why would you like modify it? Like, oh, who gave you the right? It's really like hurts me. And I was like, in the hands, maybe what they were thinking, like, oh, no one can see this, like, nobody can care. But, like, it went viral. So you can post something and be like, well, I don't know if this is going to go anywhere, but it can go viral. And it can be very harmful. Yeah, it's really unacceptable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, yeah, I see that, too. I was speaking of
I mean, not as bad as what they did, but it's kind of along them same lines as a comedian that I follow on Instagram. He just had a situation where, because there's a lot of Instagram accounts that all pop up that share memes and they share content, but they share other users' content and then they don't give them the credit for it. So basically, they're just stealing their work to boost their Instagram accounts or their social medias, claim, you know, basically making it look like it's their content or whatever. And that's kind of the same thing when there's stuff out there. There's so many different people that are just trying to, like, use whatever they can to help boost themselves, which it's lazy is what it boils down to. It's like, if you really want to have a good following or good quality content, then work hard.
You need to find your craft.
Exactly.
You need what you're good at. Yeah, that's why I always, like, it's such a new thing. I always make sure to get the illustrator's permission for, because, again, I'm assuming nobody knows who I am, which is horribly. But what I do on my Instagram is that I post poems, and sometimes I Photoshop illustrations with them. Like, if I have an idea in my head of what the illustration would look like, I would look if someone made it, and then I'll do it. But I never like copy it and Photoshop it right away. I always message the illustrator and be like, hey, I'm really a fan of your work. I do like this creative writing. Can you give me permission to use art with my writing? And I'll credit you, of course, whole thing. And I don't post. I only did it twice, where I did message the person, but then I noticed that they don't really use that account a lot. They haven't posted in a long time, so maybe they just give up on it. So, and I really wanted that illustration because it's perfect for the poem. So I use it, but again, I credit them. It's not like I did it and not credit them. I credit them, but I just didn't get the permission. And I only did it twice, if I did it since, because it doesn't feel right with me. So yeah, bit since, and I always wait for the artist's permission, and it's positive. The response is positive. People are like, some people, even one guy really shocked me. One artist shocked me. He thanked me. He was like, oh yeah, thank you. No, he said, I'm honored. He was like, I'm honored. I was like, excuse me, like, I'm honored. Like, you're giving me no, like. Nice. I'm like, you're giving me your art, like your hard work art, and I acknowledge, I'm not blind, I'm acknowledge that I'm not paying artists their work, I'm kind of promoting them. But a lot of artists, they don't like it, because you can't get paid with promotion, you can't get paid engagement. So some artists prefer it like paid, which I get it. That's why I always like, if an artist is like, no, sorry, you can't use it, or you can use it, but you have to pay me, have the means, then I don't use it. So yeah, I always make sure. So
yeah.
Each edition in my page is like acceptable, but it's, sorry, you're saying?
I was just gonna say, no, that's, that's really good. I mean, excuse me. Yeah. And then when people, because collaborating is really good. I think that's awesome. You know, you're right. There are people that are trying to make money, and they, you know, unfortunately, engagement and exposure does not pay the bills. That's something in comedy that I see a lot in comedy, where there's people that are like, hey, let me, you know, come do our show. We promise you're going to get lots of exposure. Give us your content. And it's like, no, you're not. You're probably going to have the same amount of people as I could if I posted it myself.
I never want to come across the wrong way. I never want to come across. That's my biggest fear. I always try to be nice. I only had one occasion when the illustrator told me, no, you can't use it. And, okay, context, it was all my fault. The illustrator literally in their bio wrote, no DMs. If you want to use my art, email me. And I completely passed that. And because when I ask for permission, I always go for DMs, because I think it's easier. I feel like emails are kind of, I don't know, I just don't use emails that much. I use DMs.
Mm-hmm.
So he literally wrote that, and I broke that. And I didn't realize it like right after, because he literally said, next time, please read my bio. And then I looked at his bio and I was like, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. So yeah, It was a really beautiful, it was a really beautiful illustration, and I messaged him like my normal, like very polite, like, and his text, it, I always look back at it because I don't know, it makes me laugh. It was passive aggressive, but polite. It was so passive aggressive. He said, he said something along the lines of like, my work is, no shade to him, whatever. I was in the wrong, he was in the right, of course, but it just made me laugh. Said like, I, my art is how I feed my family. I can't feed my family exposure, can I? Like, if you want to use my art, email me. And I was like, did. And I sent him an apology. I was like, I'm so sorry, I didn't read your bio, it was my fault. And I told him, I'm not gonna use your art whatsoever. So that was the only occasion that I rubbed someone the wrong way. But for the most part, everything was positive.
Yeah. And I feel like when it comes to stuff like that, when there's no money involved, you know, it's one thing, excuse me, if you were, you know, using their illustrations to put in a book to then sell, you know, where when it comes to like doing stuff like on social media where, you know, you're hoping to gain some, you know, engagement and followers, but you're not making money either off of it. So people are usually more open to collaborating like that.
Yeah, that's actually like, funny you brought that up. That's actually a not a project I'm working on, but like an idea I had, where one day, hopefully, when I do publish a poetry collection, if I ever do, one thing I don't want it to have is like the same, is like the illustrations. I want, like, basically what I'm trying to say is I have an idea in my head where like my poetry collection is going to be one of a kind, not because like I feel like my poetry is kind of unique, but like it's, I don't think anyone has done this, where like each poem has a different artist, a different, maybe someone has done it, like if anybody knows an artist or a poet who has done this, please tell me. But I have never seen one where they collabed with like 100 artists, and each poem has a different, unique style of illustration. And it's, the money is always in my head in that project, because I need to promise each artist like a percentage of the profits. So I don't know how much I'm gonna make it. It's basically complicated, but yeah, that's like me publishing that book is the only time where. Of course, I have to pay. I have to give the artist the profit. Mm-hmm. But the tricky thing is that they're gonna like, it's just one poem, so it's maybe 1%. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. It's kind of complicated. I still work on that idea.
And it really,
I don't know. I need a manager or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say it really depends too on how many poems are in a book like that too. I mean. You know, like if you do a book and there's 100 poems in it and you have 100 different illustrations, you know, you can't each give them 1% because then you'd have 100% gone, you know. So it's like, yeah, there's
it's a tricky idea. I never said that done before. And I know why, because it creates a lot of problems. If you work with one illustrator, it's much easier to work with 100 illustrations. So I understand why nobody has done it. Mm-hmm. But like, because nobody's done it, I want to do it. Because I have a special complex or something.
It definitely, I think that it's definitely a unique idea. I think it would be really good. You're right. The execution of it might be a little difficult, but I think if you can accomplish it, it's going to be something pretty amazing.
Yeah, if a manager is listening to this, DM, don't email me, DM me. I don't emails very well.
Yeah, sometimes that's, it's amazing if, you know, we get, you know, in a hurry to doing things or trying to get our own projects done, and it's easy to overlook something as simple as that, where, you know, when other, you know, trying to collab with other people, what their process is, you know, or it's like, email me versus, you know, DM me. I've even ran into that, like with this podcast, reaching out to people, and you know, they'll be like, you try to message them and they're like, well, email me instead and we'll talk and whatever.
It's just, emails give me a lot of stress, man, and I get it, like I have to work with them, but there's just, I have the, you know how everybody is like, oh, I have phone anxiety. Like, I can't call someone. And that's totally valid. My brother actually has that. My brother is the worst when it comes to phones. He refuses to call anybody. I'm actually kind of good with phones. I don't know why. But for some reason, I do emails. They just, whenever I see, like, a new notification of, like, an email of someone, like, I don't know, giving me feedback on my poetry or, like, brands who reach out to me sometimes, I'm always like, I can't do this. I'm not suited for this.
Yeah, that's
email anxiety.
That's definitely how I feel about phones as well. I'm very similar probably to your brother in that way. It's weird. When I was younger and, you know, texting and email wasn't a thing, you know, phones were the only way to really communicate. It wasn't a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm that old. There was a time.
Oh, my gosh. I feel young, which I was going to be like, damn, I'm young. Like, as an insult, nevertheless, not something to be good. Like, oh, my God, I'm so young. I'll say to you, I don't know if this is true, but I'm willing to bet I'm the youngest guest you had.
Probably. Probably. I mean, I don't know. I'm guessing probably, but, I mean, I've had some early 20s. I've had a whole handful of different comedians and stuff on here.
Yeah.
But I'm
you
sure
have,
you're
you
probably
have,
towards that yeah, younger age.
I take pride of it. I am so happy that I started my brand at this age. Well, actually. Okay, I was going to be like, okay, so I obviously didn't start my brand today. I started, like, 3 years ago when mm-hmm. I was a minor. Now I'm not here anymore, but, like, I started 3 years ago when I was a minor. And I have talked to people that I shouldn't talk to. I have trusted some people that I shouldn't trust to. It's because, like, I didn't have the brains for it. But now I'm like, oh, I understand. So you know what I'm happy also about? I'm happy that I wasn't big. I'm not saying I'm big right now, but I'm happy I wasn't as big back then. And like, because if my 16-year-old self saw that people are sending her brand emails, she will lose her mind. She will accept each and every one of it. Like, a company could be about, like, I don't know, pads, and be like, hey, write a poem about pads, and I'll accept it. But it's obviously not what my brand is literature. I can't just accept every brand that comes my way. So I'm very happy that no brands have ever reached out to me back then, because I would have made so many mistakes. I did make so many mistakes, but
yeah,
I'm happy
well,
that right now.
We all do when we're young. That's the point of being young.
Yeah. Yes. But it comes with a responsibility.
Yeah, you make the mistakes and then hopefully you learn from them. I mean, that's really what this podcast is all about, is failure and learning from mistakes and whatnot. Now, I'm curious, you know, does that happen a lot now where brands reach out and ask you to write a poem specific to whatever their brand or product is?
No, that never happened. That was just an example. But the problem is, maybe you have faced it. You know when brands email you and it's quite clear that they have never seen your contact?
Oh.
They're just like copy-paste to each creator ever. It's so clear and it's painful. I'm not gonna say the name of the brand, but I'm just gonna say the field. It was sports. Mm-hmm. It was sports. I do literature. If there's two fields opposite of each other, okay, it's sports and literature. No. Oh my god. So yeah, so it was a sports kind of like brand, and they were like, hey, we really like your content. Post a picture wearing our merch or like drinking our stuff or whatever. And I'm like, no. So yeah, so that's my main complaint, is that I have yet to receive an email with like something related to what I do. Like, I would love, like, a lot of booktuber and book talks people do this, like authors and books in PR, and they read them and they review them. Doesn't matter if it's good or bad. I also do reviews on my stories, but I guess because it's like in my highlights, nobody really pays attention to them. But yeah, so no matter if it's good or bad, they review the poem and it's exposure, basically. So I would love to do that. Like if a company sent me a poetry book or like a poetry draft or like a book to read and review or like make, I would love that. But mm-hmm. don't come to me with a very opposite field, like sport or I don't know, what's the other one? Or clothing or like jewelry. I'm sorry, that's not my thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not my thing.
I totally get what you're saying though with that. That on social media, that does seem to happen a lot. I don't get hit up by brands a lot, but sometimes what happens is, well, I'll either get... I always get up by people that promise that they can increase my social media followings, and then their profile, they don't even have any followers. Those always crack me up. But then sometimes I'll post like a video or a joke or something, and people will they won't message, but they'll comment on it and be like, oh, this is great content. Hit us up so we can collab. And it's like, you know, I make a joke about, I don't know, maybe fitness or something. And then it's like a fitness company about collabing or whatever, but it's not like, it doesn't really fit. You know, it's like, I'm making fun of exercising. We're probably, yes. where you're trying to probably get me in shape. It's not what's going on here. You know, like.
Yeah, I eat chips in my couch, watching Netflix. You go for a run at like 6 a.m. We're not the same.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, but we're not the same.
That's exactly it. So I see that a lot.
You know what? It's a good laugh. It's a good laugh. Whenever I get those emails, I'm like, ha ha, funny. You made me laugh. You made me laugh.
Yeah. Now, I'm interested in... So for me, obviously, you know, I do poetry because that's how we connected. You reached out about some stuff. You saw some of my content. And I don't,
on TikTok.
I don't really put a lot of my stuff out. Like when I did that show where I put most of that poetry came from one show, you really have to be vulnerable to do that. I thought stand-up comedy was being vulnerable, but putting, you know, poetry and stuff out and even performing
full of emotions.
Yo, yeah, absolutely.
So much emotion.
Yeah. And all sorts of emotions, from, you know, sadness to happiness to whatever the poem might be about. But you definitely have to be very vulnerable. Now, have you performed live now yet? Or is that something you're working towards?
Okay, so that's very interesting because... Am I allowed to say that you sent me an email telling me, oh, you need to prepare a bombing experience and a good experience? Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah. I didn't. Okay. I haven't got into it because I didn't know. That's kind of where I'm going. Like, I don't know.
I saw the segue. I saw it from a mile away. And I ran towards it. But no, the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's I don't have the word for it, but. You said, oh, bring a bombing experience and a good experience. My two performances are literally those two. I have only performed two times in my life, and the first one ever was a very good experience and actually started my interest in poetry, and the second one was horrible and what crushed dreams, and I only performed twice. But another performance, no, I'm definitely working on that. So, no, I only did two.
Oh, well, hey, that's
one
still...
Very bad one.
I did a couple when I was getting ready for that show to record it. That's when I really started doing performing poetry. Like I've written poetry since I was a teenager and off and on. Like I don't write regularly. It's like I do with comedy and stuff, but you know, poetry is kind of like, for me, I usually tend to, go towards poetry when I'm going through sad parts of life. You know, that's tendency when I go that way and I write more poetry. But
unfortunately, I just wanted to say, unfortunately, that's what a lot of people associate poetry with. In poetry, immediately they mean, oh, sad, depressing, teenager, going through stuff. Especially modern poetry. Like, oh my gosh, how people make fun of modern poetry. Because it's such a stigma nowadays. It hurts my soul. Like when people think poetry, they don't think magic. They don't think like nature, connected with nature, connected with your emotions. They go to sad, depression. That's why it's kind of a joke. That's why in my bio, I wrote something, insert here, something poetic, but not depressing. It doesn't have to be depressing. Poetry is such an amazing thing. It does not have to. So what I'm trying to do on stage is trying to cut those stereotypes away and trying to push the idea that poetry is everything. Mm-hmm. It's everything. Yeah, so it's everything. And it hurts me when people like connect poetry with like sadness and everything. They're like, oh, like I'm not sad, so I'm going to read poetry. I'm like, it's not that. It's not the point.
Well, no, exactly. And I know that. I just mean for me as a writer, as far as like somebody that will consume it, I'll read poetry anytime because I know that the poetry isn't just all about being sad. There's great poetry out there that are a lot of things that are very inspiring. I mean, Robert Frost has a lot of great work that's not sad. It's inspiring. You know, it's motivational. I mean, I've even written some comical type poetry that I've tried in my stand up as well. I mean,
those are amazing.
Yeah.
My favorite ones is, are you familiar with Bo Burnham?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm lost of words. He is, oh my God, I love him so much. So the reason I said Bo Burnham, his comedic stand-up is so, like, so different, I believe, so different. And, like, my favorite is when he insert his poems in his stand-up, but then they're deep, but then they're funny. So you don't know if you should, like, feel sad or you don't know if you should, like, laugh. And it's so much mixed emotions, and I fucking love him. His show, this is not, like, sponsored or anything. I just love him so much. But his... If anybody is like looking for a stand-up comedy that at the end will crush you, but it will make you laugh, go watch his What? It's free on YouTube. What by Bo Burnham, where the ending. I don't want to say it because I don't know. Maybe somebody's like, I'm gonna check it out. But the ending, it's gonna like crush you. But again, you laugh so. You don't know if you should continue laughing or continue crying at this like young adult who like offered his mental health for like the price of like being comedic and everything. Mm-hmm. I love him so much.
Yeah, his work is great. I've enjoyed all a lot of his specials. He's one of them people that's performers that's very multi-talented, and you can really see it in his work. I mean, it's not like just watching a stand-up special because he mixes, you know, music and songs and stand-up, and he does
music,
mix
poetry
and
he made a movie in 2018 or 19. Mm-hmm. Like nothing is stopping that man. That's why I'm actually like such a Bo fan. I'm actually waiting for his new thing because I know it's coming. Like, that's a phase, not a phase, but that's a phase of his life. He passed, went to poetry book, he did that. He went to music, of course, he did that. And then he went to a movie and he did that. So I'm waiting for his next thing. I'm actually like so waiting. So, Bo, if you're listening, I hope you do.
Yeah, Bo,
if you're listening, I'm waiting for your new shit. But of course, like mental health, because
I'll just say,
your mental health in check.
Hey, yeah, Bo, if you're listening, you should do this podcast. Just want to throw that out there.
such a good point. Such a good point.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I don't know. You know, are you familiar with button poetry?
Excuse me?
Are you familiar with button poetry? They put a lot of content out in a lot of like poetry books and things like that. They do a lot of spoken word stuff.
I didn't catch who you're talking about because it always cuts to that one part.
Oh, it's button poetry.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yes, I have.
Oh, okay.
I've watched a lot of their videos on YouTube. Yes. Oh my God, it's so. Oh, it's so good. They're so diverse. So many young, old, so many people of all shapes, all skins, all nationalities comes on that stage. I actually want to be on stage. Oh my god, so many people I'm trying to reach out to. I get inspired by a lot of people. But yeah, I am familiar with their work.
Okay, yeah, I was just, yeah, because they do, they put out a lot of content, a lot of really good videos that they make and stuff with the spoken word. They actually remind me a lot of, HBO used to do a series called Deaf Poetry Jam. It was like the Deaf Comedy Jam, but it was, it was a Russell Simmons production, and it was Most Deaf hosted it. And it was like spoken word poetry. That was like such a fun show to watch. There are a lot of great poets on there, and some of the stuff, you know, kind of going back to the comical type poetry. Like they would have, you know, the really cool thing about like poetry. Well, anything really, when you can add comedy to it, is that you can write something very powerful and add some humor to it to kind of break the tension, but it still has a powerful message. And you see that a lot with, yeah. I feel like with like the button poetry and, you know, even when they were doing Deaf Poetry Jam, those different things, there was always a little bit of humor in some of the poems, but they were still really, really, you know, deep.
Those are the best ones because like the audience, it's always good when you catch the audience, like out of the, like, the audience is like laughing, and then you hit them with a punch. Oh my gosh! And then you hit them with a punch, and then they're like, "Oh my gosh, I'd be laughing." One like instant that I like to think of. Are you familiar with the? Oh, it's in French. Festival de Rire in Marrakesh.
I'm not.
It's like. You're not. Marrakesh is in Morocco, and they have. I'm actually not educated on this, so I may be saying wrong information, but my father used to watch it a lot, which is like a festival in Morocco, hosted by Jimmy. I think his name is Jimmy. He's a very like famous person there, where it's just a very big festival of North African comics and like so it's based there. And I forgot his name. Oh my god, his name. But like one comic, he basically was, he was just like, you know, making a joke, whatever. And then the end, I don't know what you guys call it, but you know when you like take a pause and then you know it's the ending. Like I saw a lot of comics do that where it's getting closer to the ending, so you take a pause and then you go into something kind of emotional, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're. So basically what the comic did is that he was making a joke about how it's stupid to have a goldfish because it's the only animal that you wait for to die. Like when you go on vacation and you come, you have a lot of bills to pay. That's a joke that he made. You have a lot of bills to pay. You have a lot of clothes to wash. But what you do, you goldfish and you see if it dies. I don't know. I love that joke so much. So yeah. And then he segued to why he has a goldfish is because of his son. And then he started talking about his son, how he is 10 years old, and he told him, he told the audience, I actually had a conversation with my, before coming to this festival, the Marrakesh festival, and he told him, oh, Dad, why do you have to go to this festival? And he told him, well, because I need to make people laugh. And he said, but, oh, Dad, why do you have to make people laugh? Because, well, that's my job. And he was like, but, Dad, why do people want to hear you laugh all the time? And he told him, well, people cry in their job, so they come at mine to laugh. And the kid told him, oh, Dad, do you cry at your job? And then it's silence. And it's like, whoa. And I love that moment so much. And he actually makes fun of it. He's like, oh, you didn't wait for that, did you? You were all laughing and smiling. But then I said something emotional like, yeah. So I just love that so much. And he talks about how comedics actually sometimes do have mental health problems. They actually, it's not always smiles and cries. And I love that part so much. So that's what I'm talking about, dude. When you're like when comics do this, they make you laugh, they make you forget about your day, and then they hit you in the punch.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's truly amazing. I mean, I feel like, for me anyway, comedy and poetry really align pretty well. I mean, and a lot of, you know, kind of talking about the stigmatism of, you know, poetry being all about being sad and depressed and so on and so forth, whatever, and people making fun of, you know, poetry and even modern poetry or whatever. But it's funny to me because a lot of great comics actually also do poetry or write poetry or even publish poetry. You'd be surprised how many, you know, you could probably Google stand-up comics and find poetry books and stuff that they have done and stuff, you know, like I know Mark Maron is a good example of that. I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Maron, but he's a pretty noteworthy comic in America. He has a pretty popular podcast, and, you know, he's had a history. You know, he's been in comedy like 20, almost 30 years probably, but he's got a history. But he's got poetry books out there that he's written, you know, and I know Bill Hicks, I think, wrote poetry in addition to doing stand-up and stuff. So it's, yeah, it's a weird stigmatism, and, like, people make fun of it. Because I remember, too, when so what inspired my show was a really bad relationship that I went through. And that's where a lot of the poetry that I wrote came from, that going through that time. And a lot of my friends who were comics, you know, they always made fun of me about writing poetry. And I know that they were
I'm officially offended.
Yeah.
I'm offended on your behalf.
But I know that they were just kind of messing because they're my friends or whatever. But, you know, I did take a lot of crap for it. And I always think it's funny. And it's even become like running jokes, you know, like some of the stuff did. And it's so much so that I actually, I don't know, I sent you the link and I don't know if you watched it or not. But there's a part in it where I actually make a reference to some of the jokes and stuff that they were making fun of me. Like, I actually put it into the, I wrote it into the show. But I think it's always funny because
only poems I saw of you was like one called I Say Sorry like 1,000 times and Too Deep. I saw these two. And then you know how in TikTok, I don't know if a lot of people have TikTok, but For You Page, like, it's customized to whatever you like, whatever you share. So like, yeah, I had a phase where I was like deep into poetry, which you will think, well, you're a poet, that's what your For You page should be. Not really. My For You page is a lot of relationship TikToks and a lot of craft art, but it wasn't poetry for a long time. But then like a poetry came and I liked it, and then I got a lot, and then I saw one of yours. It was like, oh yeah, I actually forgot about this. Oh, this is not excited, but I just remember. So yeah, I saw the I Say Sorry 1,000 times, and I loved it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so, like, so much. And then I wanted to contact you, but you know when you refresh your page and it goes away?
Oh, yeah.
So that happened, and I got so sad. I was like, damn, I didn't catch your name. I didn't catch your logo. I didn't catch anything, just that video. So I was like, oh, whatever, I'm not going to see him again. And a couple of scrolls, like 1, 2, 3, you popped up again with the second poetry one, the Too Deep. And I was like, that's it. And immediately went to your page, went to your Instagram, and I'm like, I fucking love your shit. I didn't even know you had a podcast. Like, as as it was said in our text, I just said, like, I love your poems. And then I noticed you have a podcast, and I was like, do you by chance take any other? I saw that you take a lot of comedians, and I was like, oh, I'm not funny. He's not gonna take me. And then you surprised me. You're like, I take actually other artists. And I was like, can I be on it? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, and it worked out. No, this is great. Because you're the first poet I've had on here. I mean, I'm sure I've had people on that have...
I call that victory.
Yeah, exactly. You get to claim that. You're the first poet. The full-on poet. I've had people...
When this podcast blows up, I'm gonna be like, I was the first poet.
Exactly. No, I do. I find, like I said, I find all performing arts and all art interesting because you can learn from failures out of everything. I mean, that's kind of the important thing, is learning from the mistakes we make. But It's really interesting to me because, like I said, with poetry, it's you really have to be vulnerable, not just to write it and put it out there, but even like performing it. Like I know, like with comedy, they you know stand up comedy people will say you got to be really vulnerable to be do comedy because you're up there by yourself and you're just putting yourself out there, which is true. But to them people, they should go try to do poetry because sometimes that's pretty hard, and it can be. It can be both ways. I've went and watched some live poetry where I was like, ooh, this is rough. You know, where like it wasn't the greatest poetry. But they're out there. But then at the same time, I can respect them whether I enjoyed their poem or not or other people that doesn't matter. I still have a lot of respect for anybody that goes and puts themselves out there like that because that – you know, you really have to.
Also, comics like have the teeny tiniest of shield, and it is like fun of themselves. Like, yes, you are vulnerable, but you are out there poking fun of yourself. You're making jokes, even if nobody laughed. At the end of the day, you can come home and you can be like, you know what? I laughed at myself. I made jokes about my life. I can see this from a light, and it's okay. But like for poets, this is like, I got you can censor it. I don't want to say, like, I'm like, okay, I got some bad shit happening to me. Like, this happened. I got abused. I got trauma. Like, I got raped. I got, like, knife punched to the head. All of this crazy shit. And yes, you can make fun of that, too. But you're not out there. You're not on stage to be made fun of. You are there to people hear your story. But, like, for comedians, you're out there to be made fun of. Even if nobody hears you, like, you are there to laugh. For poets, mm-hmm. you are there to suffer, like, hear my suffer. Not always suffer, but you know what I mean.
And here, so, you're there to snap. That's yeah. what you should be there. If you're going to see poetry, you should be there to snap.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's amazing. I'm curious. This I want to get more into the technical stuff with you as a writer. How often do you write? What's your writing process? Do you write every day? Do you write when you feel inspired? And then to follow up before just another question to think about too is when do you decide a poem is ready for you to make a video and then you consider it done and ready to put out?
Right. Okay. So to answer your first question, when do I write? Well, first of all, writing like to the bare minimum. If I don't have Instagram, if I don't have my page, if I don't have the followers, writing is my outlet. It's the place I go to just put all the emotions, the stress, the anger, the sadness, the happiness, the inspiration, the dreams I dream of, the conversation I tell people, it's all there. I have like many journals. So yeah, whenever I, this sounds overwhelming because people are going to be like, how do you put every emotion you ever had into a page? And it's not every emotion, it's just the emotion that sticks with me. Whether something made me very angry, that happened to me, like, to give an example, I had a conversation. I had a conversation with someone and they made me angry. And what did I do? I went to my laptop and I wrote a poem, and the title of the poem was Avalanche. And it's basically just saying, I'm gonna let an avalanche draw them all. Like, you can see like how it's a reflection. It's basically, I didn't like punch the person. I didn't cuss the person. I just quietly went to my laptop, wrote about a poem, how I'm gonna drown them in snow. So you can see how that reflects what happened. So that came from an angry place. Also a happy place. For example, if an example with me and my partner, a very good example, I got closer. It got close to our anniversary. And then we just had a moment to each other. We were like FaceTime, we were calling, and we were just chilling, and it was so nice. And then out of nowhere, I got inspired to speak about him and how happy he made me. So I opened my journal, I write it, and he was like, what are you doing? I was like, you'll see later. And then I posted the poem on our anniversary. adversity. So that's how it writes. It's when a very specific emotion comes to me, and I can't bottle it. I need to put it out there. So some people can paint, some people can scold, some people can shout their emotions, some people can bake, act, and that's basically it. How often? I'll say definitely 2 or 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have a really bad writing block, I'll go like a month without writing. My latest writing block was the end. It's fun. You think like the lockdown will get me so depressed that I'm not going to be able to be inspired. I actually wrote so many things in lockdown, like an idea after an idea. The moment the lockdown where I'm from ended, nothing, absolutely nothing. I was paralyzed. So yeah, the most writing block I had was like a month or two. And what's bad is that when I'm aware, because I can forget about it, I can do other stuff, I have other hobbies, I can, like, especially baking, I love to bake, I can bake, I can talk to my friends, I can study for like my college stuff, for everything, but once it hits me like, dude, you haven't posted in like 2 months, or like you haven't written something in 2 months, then when I'm like, no, I need to push myself. So what I do, I go to my notes app, and because my notes app is like a treasure. Like, if anybody wants to steal my idea, they shouldn't go to my Instagram or hack my Instagram. They need to go to my notes app. I have so many. Sometimes I think to myself, that's actually a question that gives me anxiety. Like, what if someday I'm out of ideas? But then I go to my notes app and I have 1,000, and I'm like, I'm good. This can be good for like, until I'm like 60 or something. So yeah, anyways, how do I get out of writer block? I go to my app and I pick an idea, and I just I remember back what happened to me to get this idea, and I just push myself. I also listen to music. Sometimes it helps me. I even have a playlist for titled Poetry Lives Here. It's basically poems that gives me so cliche poetry feeling, but I don't know how to explain. It's just a very deep feeling that I have. So yeah, that's like my routine of when I write. I hate writer block. I really like hate it.
Oh,
so much. I wrote two.
Writer's block's the worst.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I wrote two poems about writer block, actually. And your second question, I literally forgot. My ADHD brain.
No, that's okay. So I was just kind of curious if you had like a strict writing process, you know, because sometimes people will,
right,
every day they get up and the first thing they're going to do is they're going to spend the first hour writing no matter what or whatever. But then the next question that I was curious about is, when do you decide that a poem is done? You know, but, because I don't know how it is for you as a poet, you know. For me, as a poet and a writer, when I'm doing writing stuff, and I'm getting better at it. When I was younger, I didn't really do a lot of editing with poetry. I'm just like, oh, blah, 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 and oh, this is it. It's done. Whatever. Now I do a lot of rewriting and thinking, and I do a lot of pre-writing, really, before I even write anything. So when I do finish something, it's usually pretty close to how I want it. But with that being said...
See, that's very interesting, because... what you're telling me is that when you write, let's say you're writing a poem, when you write a poem, in your head, you don't have the finish line?
I mean,
like,
I don't
know when it's going to end?
No, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I have, usually when it comes to whatever I'm writing, whether it's a poem or writing a comedy bit or whatever, like, something will inspire me to write something, okay? Say I'm writing a poetry, maybe it's about being in love, okay? I think about that idea, and then little phrases or, you know, lines will pop in my head, and it's not necessarily that's how it's going to say. It's not like, oh, this line popped in my head, and then I think, oh, this line popped in my head. That's not the order that necessarily is going to flow for the poem. So, like, these little phrases and maybe words and other little thoughts will fleet through, and then, you know, I try to... think about how it sounds, how it will sound if, you know, as a reader, you know, if somebody reads it out loud, and how it flows and that kind of thing. And it's a lot about arranging, you know. I suppose it would be the same thing as like a musician arranging music, you know, like the composition of the actual music, not necessarily the lyrics. It's very similar to that, I think, where it's like, okay, so this one main thought made me think of all this stuff about being in love, and I'm putting it into this project or into this poem. Where does each of these phrases and things that were inspired by this one thought fit into it? So, but I think a lot about that before I even sit down and do the actual writing. And I do that the same with stand-up. Like with stand-up, I don't write physically very often. Yeah. I don't physically write my jokes. I have an idea. I work out how I want it to sound in my head, and then I say it out loud and then listen back to it.
Okay. That's literally so interesting to me. So interesting because I don't know how to explain it, but I'm going to try to explain it the best way I can. When I write something, right? No. When I have an idea of something. Like, I saw something that inspired me, like a metaphor, like I have a metaphor, an idea. I have an idea, right? Almost always, I know how to finish it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how can I explain this. Never once where I had an idea and I'm like, oh, where is the stop sign? Where should I stop? No, each and every time I have an idea in my head, I know the punchline. I always call the end of my poems a punchline, even though it's not a punchline. But I always know a punchline. I always know when to stop. So you're like, how do you know a poem is done? I'm going to say, oh, when I reach the punchline. I don't know how to explain it. But okay. So I spoke to you about my notes app. I have my notes app. Basically how I order my stuff is like I have labels. So I have for poetry stuff, I have like four definite labels. I have things called ideas. What are ideas? Just everything I saw inspired me. I put it down there just so I don't forget it. So ideas is like very general. The second thing is titles. Now, you will say, oh, ideas and titles, the same thing. No. Sometimes, and this is really something weird I do. I don't know if writers do this. Sometimes when I think of something, it's not an idea title. I know, like, I know the poem, right? I know what the title is, but I don't know the skeleton of it. I don't know the structure. I still need to work on that. But like the title, it's there. So like an idea and a title are very different. And then I have starter line and finish line. A starter line is like a line that I think is perfect to start a poem. Like, and again, I know like the skeleton of it. I know the skeleton of it, but it now I only have the starter line locked to write the next bits, because in my head there's like starter line, there is like, I call it like the meat of the poem, and then the finishing line. And so yeah, some poems, I only have a starter line for them, but another poems, I have only the finishing line for them. So I have how I'm gonna end it, but I have no idea how I'm gonna start or what's the meat of it. So going back to your question, when I know a poem ready is when I reach its finishing line, when I see it, like this is where it's gonna like end. Like, so I open my journal, I have an idea in mind, I write, I search for rhymes, basically it takes me, you also said when you like draft or like edits or stuff, it takes me, I scribble everything that I want to put, right? So I scribble it. Start the line, meet, finish an idea. And then I try to piece by piece make it make sense. So then I wrote it again. And then I need to like check for grammar mistakes, spelling mistakes, because English is not my first language. It's actually my third language. So I always have a draft for spelling and grammar. I need to make sure that my grammar, especially for poetry, because my biggest pet peeve is when like there is a typo in a poetry book or a typo in a textbook, and the teacher or like the prof is like, oh my gosh, this is so deep. What could it mean? No, this is just a typo. Like, not everything has to be.
I love that, that they try to make it look like it's more than what it really is.
You have no idea how many times I've had a conversation with an English teacher, and he tried to make a fucking... I think what happened is that, like, in our textbook in high school, like, there was, like, the quotation mark, like, dialogue, but they forgot the quotation at the end, and they were like, oh, what could it mean? Like, it means, after that line, everything's imaginary, and I'm like, excuse me, sir, this is a typo. You can't tell me this is not a typo. This is garbage. And then what's worse is that I looked it up on the internet, and I looked up the original because I couldn't find it on Google, and it had, like, a quotation. So I told him, see? And she was like, oh, the internet. Like, they can, like, excuse me? No. So anyways. That drove me crazy. So, yeah. So I always make sure to have my spelling correctly, my grammar correctly, because I don't want anyone to be like, what did she mean? But, like, at the end, it's, like, a spelling mistake. So that's the draft for spelling and grammar. And then the end draft is, like, I read it over again, but at this point, it's just how it sounds. I can't explain this one. The final draft is I read it from top to bottom, and maybe if a line doesn't sound good or sound heavier than the... And some like, professional English writers or, like, poets, they're going to be like, oh, that because poems have a structure, like a sonnet has rules. I don't know the rules. A lot of people may think that I actually don't know the rules of poetry. I should. I know I should. But well, for me, it just instantly. If I read a line, and then if I read the four first line, the first verse, if you will. If it doesn't, if a line feels heavier, this is how we explain it. I don't know if it doesn't make sense. But if a line is heavier than the line before it or the line after, I need to edit it. And edit it. And so, yeah. And then, of course, the last thing is an illustration. If I have an illustrator in mind for this poem, I go to, like, Instagram or Tumblr or DeviantArt, and I look for an illustration that fits it, and I message the artist. If the artist gave me the permission, I Photoshop it. So basically, long story short, 1, 2, 3, 4. I have four drafts in total. And then I'm like, okay, this is ready, post with the caption and everything.
Nice. It sounds like a good process. You know, going back to talking about formats or poetries or types of poems or the rules of poetry, that's the thing I think is dumb, and especially with English, is, you know, they try to put rules on everything. There's no rules to writing poetry. You're writing emotions, and those emotions are very, I can't put rules on your emotions. You know what you're feeling. No. You know how you feel. You know how you need to put it out there. And I feel like that's...
No, I know what English... I'm so sorry. I know what English teachers are trying to get across. When they say, like, there's rules, they don't mean the emotion rules. Of course, like, they realize that, like, everybody has their own emotion. They mean, like, structure-wise.
No, I know that. But even structure...
Yeah, okay.
It's like, who cares if it's a sonnet or a haiku, or you're not writing the poem. If I go to sit down to write a poem, my objective isn't to write a specific formatted poem. My objective to sit down and write a poem is to write a poem about what I'm feeling or whatever's inspiring me to write that poem. Having a structured format does not matter. I don't feel like it matters, or it should. I mean... The it's in your name. It's the beauty in the words.
Yeah. No, your opinion is completely valid. I'm not going to be here like, you have to make this the right way. No, but...
But a lot of English teachers do teach that.
Yeah. Yeah, which is sucks. And that actually goes... Yeah, it can go up.
Oh, I was just gonna say, yeah. I think one of the biggest issues you see, not just in writing, but in all art forms. I mean, yes, there's in writing there are certain things you do have to follow. Grammar, obviously, you know, there are grammatical things and structures of sentences and phrases and things like that. Formatting of a poem, I think, is, I don't think that matters. I'm not writing a poem to write a specific type of formatted poem. I'm writing the words or whatever. But you see this a lot in all forms of art, is that people try to put rules and constrictions on what an artist should or shouldn't do. And that's where I'm like, no, it's their art. They should be able to do whatever they want. you know, let them be the artist and be creative. And because you don't know, when you put constraints on any type of an artist, you don't know what you're...
It kills it. It kills its spirit.
Yeah, and you don't know what you could be holding them back from creating something even greater.
Yeah, I got you.
Really fulfilling their potential.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with everything you said. I just think maybe it rubs them the wrong way when someone writes something and they call it a sonnet, let's say. And to their eyes, it's clearly not a sonnet. So that's when it's acceptable. It's acceptable to be like, hey, I'm sorry. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, rules on you, but this is how a sonnet structure should be. Don't call it if it's not a sonnet.
That's a valid argument. I guess anytime I've ever written anything, I just call it a poem.
Easy round, I see. Okay, well, some of us have to learn all the rules.
No, I'm kidding. I'm like, hey, I wrote a poem. Like it or don't. Either way, it's still there.
Still there. But just a second argument is that, and I believe in this, they think a formatting helps you with your poem, which I think is true. Because you can, I don't know how to explain it, but again, the reason that the rules exist is because, so the poem flows, there's a flow. So if like your lines are heavy, like if you write like a long line, but then short line, but then like a medium line, no, the rules are here to guide you and help you. So I guess that's another argument they can have, is that if you actually, I know it's tedious, but if you learn the rules, it can actually help you. So yeah, it's a spectrum. I obviously, I don't use rules. I don't use it. But again, it's just how it feels. I don't know how to explain. But whenever I write, a lot of people told me this. They were like, "How do you write everything that flows?" I'm like, "I don't know. I just do." I guess that's the talent in it, maybe. The skill can practice. Like, if you scroll to my old poems, they're bad. They're bad. I just had a realization. All my past poems passed by my brain. They're bad, but with practice, with reading dictionaries, reading of books, learning what old English is and why it became the modern English, trying to writings from another language, with practice the skills improves, but skill and talent are very different things. So I guess, in all honesty, my skill came with practice, over 3 years writing every day, every emotion. I'm bound to improve if I listen to the right advice, but the talent in me literally is the flow of it all. I can make writing flows. I can make you enter this wild story, basically this wild word. I like to promote whenever people are like, what vibe your poems give, I always promote it as, I try my best, each and every poem of mine is a story. I know it's crazy, because how can you make just three verses a story? But it actually is. It has a beginning, which is the starter line. It has the meat of it, the context, the whole plot, if you will. And it has the finishing line. So, yeah, my poem structure are like story structure. It needs to begin and it needs to end. Begin and end. Yeah.
You got that. Beginning, middle, end. I mean, you can do story structure just about anything. And that's exactly what you're talking about, beginning, middle, end, with your,
that's what I do. I always call them starter line and finish line and the meat of it. But I didn't realize that I'm literally copying the structure of a story, and that's what I'm doing. So basically, my poems are like stories and poems. Yeah.
Nice. No, that's awesome. How many poems have you written and put out on your Instagram? Roughly, I'm sure you don't have an exact number, but
It's 200 something. It's 260 something.
Wow, that's a lot of poems.
Do you think so?
Well, I mean,
I don't think it's a lot.
I mean, for the extra effort that you have to put in because you're putting it out online, like, you know, because you're doing the Photoshop on top of, you know, you write it out and then you're Photoshopping with the poem on that and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of effort that you put into it outside of the writing. So I don't know. It seems like a lot. But I guess I don't know what's a baseline to compare that to. You know, honestly, I don't even know how many. I don't even know if I've written that many poems in my entire life.
Well, I've been doing this for 3 years. So how long have you been writing poems?
Well, I mean, on and off since I was a teenager. I mean, 25 plus years. But
Okay. But
then, like I said, I don't consistently just write poetry or, you know, it goes back and forth, you know. And I primarily write comedy, so that's where my focus is. But yeah, so yeah. I know. So to me, that's impressive. 260 poems is a lot of poems.
Oh, thank
but
you.
That's where I'm going with that. Yeah. I think it's impressive.
And to think, I told you I have more poems, still like roughly sketch ideas,
mm-hmm.
but to think that I have more ideas in my notes app than I literally have 1,000 ideas. I literally have 1,000 ideas. So that actually kind of makes me happy. As I said, I always have that fear that, oh, maybe one day, like, I'm not going to have like any ideas. But then I look at my notes app and I'm like, I'm good. Like, this worry, this anxiety, it comes from nowhere because I'm actually good. And the thing is, it's never a thing where, like, I sit down and I'm like, okay, I need to think of ideas. No. Again, poetry isn't everywhere, every corner, everything. I can literally, this is going to sound so weird. This is going to sound so weird. But I literally see things people don't see. I know this is going to sound super weird, but I really see things. That, I see metaphors in things that people don't see. I cannot express how much. Can you tell that I'm passionate about this?
Oh yeah, absolutely, very passionate.
I'm very passionate about it because I literally can't see things. And then when the only thing is that people can see them because they don't think about it. So my enjoyment is that when I see the thing that nobody else sees, right? And I wrote it down in perfect metaphor, and I put it out there. Then people are like, oh, I see what you're talking about. Like, I see where you got that. And that's literally the enjoyment I have. Just a quick example. My latest poem is called Soldier Man Toys. And it's a blend of reality and fiction. And it talks about, like, how do I explain this? It talks about, you know, like, the little soldier toys? They're, like, green. They were in, like, Toy Story. Are you familiar with them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I remember having my own of those. I'm like, yeah. Another one of those, hey, I'm so old, I remember them as toys.
So when me and my brother were young, this actually happened. And it's such a memory that stuck with me. I have no idea why. But when me and my brother were young, we would play with them all the time. And we actually put like a row of those soldier toys in the door. You know how the door, like when it closed, it's like, I don't know what it's called, but like a line. So we put them there, and our idea was like, we had such a big imagination, but our idea was if our mother came to like take our toys away, like the soldier would stop her, even though she's like a big woman and we had like these toys. But like to see the innocent, we actually thought to see the innocent, but then something happened where my mother like came, bless her soul, and she entered without her shoes, and so she stepped on one of the toys and broke his head, and she yelled at us. But we thought it was so funny because, and we had the whole funeral for the little toy and his head and everything. So this is from one hand. On another hand, one time, I'm going to explain why I said this story. On another hand, one time I was scrolling. Another inspiration I have is very paintings. I get inspired by paintings. I think I see stuff in paintings that a lot of people don't see. So I was like, I literally just searched paintings in Google, and I start scrolling, and I saw this really beautiful painting. Soldier, you see only his back, and he's looking through the, he's looking across the sea. And that painting made me think of this incident. And then I thought of this really cool idea, where like, oh, like this father gifts his kids these like mentors, and he tells them like, play with them, they will protect you. And then he like plays with them and everything, but then he accidentally crushes one of them and cuts his head off, just like our mother. So you can see how everything is inspired, how our mother cuts our little toy head off. And at the end of the poem, like, so the dialogue, it's like it's a dialogue and everything, and at the end of the poem, the kid tells his father, I hope you don't get killed by a giant with two, which makes you realize that the father is a soldier, and the kid is scared that his father is gonna die in the war.
Oh wow, that's amazing.
Do you see? Oh my gosh, I just said a piece of my own work. I feel like such a douchebag. I'm just saying, it's a really cool idea. So I feel like, you know how I blended those two together? I blended the story of like the painting of the old soldier that doesn't exist. That soldier doesn't have a story, or maybe he does, but I don't know it. But I blended it with the story of my mother killing one of our soldier toys. And so I saw that, right? I saw the connection. Mm-hmm. But some people can be like, if I say it like this, some people are going to be like, what are you talking about? That sounds crazy. But because I posted it as a poem, it became a story of its own. And what made me happy, one of the comments under it was like, I totally see what you did there. I love the ending. Like, it all makes sense now. Because I started it with the painting. I gave the audience the painting. I'm like, look at this. And then I started the poem. And at the end, when you hear, I hope you don't get killed by a giant with two, then you realize, oh, the father is a soldier. And he's scared that he's going to kill, just like he killed his soldier. So, boom. Like, a story in a poem. There you go.
That's beautiful. That's awesome. That's fantastic. Do you get a lot of engagement on your, when you post stuff, like comments and stuff? Because I don't, for me, like I said, I honestly, the only reason I started sharing my poetry from my show is I've been playing around with TikTok, and I was just looking for content to put out there. Because I'm not really into doing TikTok trends. I'm not trying to be, you know, dancing and lip syncing or whatever else is out there, you know. And I was just like, oh, I've got this one person show that I have that's like an hour long. I can cut it up and take clips out of it and throw it on TikTok and see what happens. And I was, at first I was just taking some of my stand up out of it, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I should throw some poems up there. I've got some that are within the time frame that I can put them on there. And so I did that, and I was amazed, honestly. I did not expect any of my poetry to get any, to do any good. I just figured it was content to put out there. And the one poem, A Sorry a Thousand Times, got a lot, like, a lot of views and a lot of
comments. That's why it ended comments. Up on my For You page. It literally ended up on my For You page,
But I wonder how that is for you, because you talked about somebody commenting on that.
Yeah, so, okay, I'm going to be totally honest. Before I hit, like, because right now I'm, like, 5,000 followers, and I'm going to shoot, like, hit 6,000. Before I hit 5,000, I didn't get a lot. I mean, I did, once in a while, I did get a comment that, like, oh, this is so beautiful. Like, this is so beautiful. Each poem, like, can resonate someone in some way, right? So, before, like, this year, I didn't get a lot of engagement, but I'll tell you how I'm starting to get a lot of comments. It's because I discovered something called reaching out. I discovered something called okay. You know those, like, those messages you get where you're like, I love your, it's just like the brand one. This is Gwen's whole full circle. But like, oh, I love your stuff. Please check out my stuff. Like, they post that in your comments. Nobody likes those people. In all honesty, nobody likes someone who wants clout or whatever. Yeah. Nobody likes when someone like wants to I don't know the word, but cash in on you. So I never, ever, ever want it to look like that. I never want, even if I'm inspired by another poet, I never wanted to send them a message, be like, hey, I really like your stuff. Just give my stuff a shout, a shot, if you will. Maybe you will like it. I was so afraid of rubbing people the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But then I downloaded TikTok just like this year or whatever. I downloaded TikTok. I was like, let's see what the fuzz is about. And I started seeing videos. And then I discovered one of my favorite motivational speaker ever, Gary V. I don't know if you're aware of him. Have you heard of him?
I didn't quite. I heard Gary. What was the last name?
Gary V.
Gary V. I feel like the name is familiar, but I probably have heard the name, but I'm not necessarily familiar with their work. But
okay, so I love him so much. So Gary V is a motivational speaker, right? But the thing that makes him unique is that he believes that you should always, like, not follow where the crowd is, but you should always expand. Like, his one motto is, like, if you started somewhere, never stick to that somewhere. Always jump to other platforms. Like, if you started with Instagram, because Instagram was hot in the day, you need to realize that one day Instagram will fall, and you need to take your content and your audience to somewhere else. You should never be ashamed. And he's like, I believe, he's the first motivational speaker that I found on TikTok. Like, because when you think motivational speakers, you think TV, radio, you know, you don't think. And he says that's what a lot of motivational speakers, like, that's what their mistake is. They think people, like, won't listen to us on social media, but they will. Mm-hmm. Because that's what people are in right now, social media. And he says back in the day when TV was the hot thing, nobody wanted to go to TV, right? They thought it was weird. But no, it's had. Nobody wanted to jump on, like, the radio, but it was. And now social media, everybody has, like, when I say, like, everybody, I don't mean us. I mean, like, the big people out there. They look down on social media. They don't realize what they can do in it. So I discovered him in TikTok, and I loved him. I started to see a lot of his TikToks, to scroll on a lot of his TikToks, and they really helped me, and I loved them. And one of them, he said something, I don't remember what he said, but he was like, someone told him, what do you do? And he was like, because I want people to realize what that one DM can do to them. I want people to push their stuff, push in the right way. And you can just see how many people you can. And I never did that because I was scared. I was scared of, again, rubbing people the wrong way. I was scared of people not liking me because I did that. But I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to put that aside. I'm going to put my fears aside. The worst thing they can do is say no. And the worst thing they can do is, like, feel bad. Like, not feel bad. Feel like I annoy them.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's not something bad. And I believe what separates me from those people that, like, hey, I like your stuff, check my account, like those messages, is actually I put effort in my messages. So the people that I reach out to is the people that have the same interests as me that I found on social media. And I always tell them, I love your contacts. I really love your contacts. I love this specific, they know that I actually see their stuff, that I'm genuine. And I ended up by saying, my poetry is free on my Instagram page. If you can just take a look. And I tell them what it's behind is basically a mixture of modern and traditional style. And I never ask for them for a follow. I never ask them to comment or to, like, I give them the choice. I'm like, if you like it, good. If you don't, that's totally your. I'm just, like, putting it out there. I'm being vulnerable, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be so. And I was blown away by the amount of support that I got. People are so nice, truly. People are like, dude, you're talented. I love your stuff. People even thanked me for like reaching them. And that was not my expectations. I always think, oh, they're going to say they hate. They're going to say I'm annoying them. But no, it was so nice. So going back to your question, you said, do you get engagement? I literally got engagement because I'm starting to do this, because I'm starting to reach out to people. people, and people like comment and give. I just found, thank you for, I found this poem, I found that poem, I found you from TikTok, I found you from here. So I believe from here on out, I'm going to get more and more engagement, if finger crossed. And I love it. I really love it. I love when people interact with my stuff. I really love it.
Yeah, it's amazing, especially when you're putting something out that can really resonate with people. You know, and for me, that's something that, what you know, with the poem that blew up on TikTok, that's where I really caught me off guard. Like I said, I put it out there just because I was looking for stuff to put out. I had no idea. You know, I figured it would be like most of the stuff I have on TikTok, less than 100 views, maybe a couple hundred views, no big deal. And the amount of people that were commenting and reaching out about it was just like, I was like, wow, I was in awe that they liked it so much. But also it I don't know, as an artist, it feels good to like have something that makes people have emotions, whether, you know, that they can be like, oh wow, I really feel this. This really resonates. This is powerful. This will help me, you know, or whatever it may be. So I always think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I really loved it.
That's great. Well, we should probably get wrapped up. We've been going for quite a while. You left. You're muted, and Oh, no. Now you're back. I was like, uh-oh.
No, I clicked the comment, the camera thing.
Yeah, I was going to say it got muted for a second there. Oh, no worries. I was just going to say, we've been talking for quite a while, so I should probably wrap this up. Thank you so much for joining and talking about writing poetry and writing. This has been great. I definitely feel like it was very constructive for, you know, people listening. When they do listen, they'll get something out of, you know, writing and stuff. We got really deep into that. I appreciate you giving me your time.
It's okay. I just feel bad because, like, the whole, like, thing with your podcast is, like, the art of bombing. And since I didn't perform a lot, I couldn't give you a good story that I bombed in.
Oh, that's
kind of bad.
Oh, that's okay. Just because it's the art of bombing doesn't mean we have to talk about bombing. Like I said, I've had business people on this podcast that, you know, their bombing stories were talking about failure in business. So it's not all about live performance.
Oh, okay. Then great. I feel less bad.
Yes, Dad, this was great. This was a great conversation. I thought this was great having a different, you know, like I said, you're the first poet I've had on here and being able to talk about writing processes and stuff. Because even though your writing process relates to you writing poetry, it still, you know, can resonate with other types of writers because we all have processes and ways of doing things. So it's always, always good to talk about the technical stuff.
Can I just ask? When is it, like, appropriate to post? Because, like, you just post a clip of this podcast or something? Or I just wait for you until you post it on your stuff? Because I don't want to, like...
Oh, yeah, I would wait till I post it. Because...
Okay, perfect.
And it'll be probably a little couple weeks, because I've got a really long backlog. So it'll be at least a week or two before this will come out. But yeah, I can send you some stuff, too, to if you want to, when it's ready to... You can post or whatever. The last thing I like to talk about, you already talked about your greatest show or whatever, but I like doing a fun little question, a little game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20, and I'm going to ask a random corresponding question.
Oh, okay. I pick a number right now?
Yep.
Okay, 5.
5? All right.
Yeah.
Question 5. What is the funniest thing that has happened to you recently?
The funniest thing?
Yep, the funniest thing.
You can't put me on a spot like this, dude. I'm not prepared for this. Oh my gosh. You really can't put me on. I will crumble.
Okay, that's fine. Actually, there was one other question I wanted to ask you that I forgot to ask.
Excuse me, but you know the bad part? We're going to end this podcast. I'm going to go. I'm going to make myself tea or coffee. And I'm going to look at my cup and be like, oh, shit, that story. And that's going to happen. I'm going to hate myself.
Please don't hate yourself. But I totally relate. That happens to me all the time. I like, get put on the spot, and then afterwards, it's just like when I'm doing stand-up where, like, I'll forget a joke or something, like, in the middle of a set, and then as soon as I get off stage, I'll remember that I forgot that joke, and then I'm like, oh, man, I missed it. But
exactly.
I forgot to ask you this a little earlier, so kind of going back into this, but you said that English was your third language, and so that means, obviously, you have a first and second language. Do you write poetry in any of your other languages that you can speak?
Okay, yeah, so I'm bilingual, that's true. I know three languages. My first language is Arabic, my second language is French, and my third language is English. I did the very start of my poetry journey when I was like 10 years old or whatever. I did write poetry in Arabic because that's the only English that I knew. And then it was French. I hated French. It was obligatory to learn in school. I still hate it this day. and then I don't want to say that I self-taught myself English. It was half and half, because I self-taught myself when it comes to my vocabulary. Like, I read a lot of things. I watched a lot of things. That's how my vocabulary expanded. School only taught me, like, grammar and spelling. That's what school helped me in English. But to answer your question, yes, I did write stuff in Arabic, and I even have, like, projects. I want to put other languages in my page slowly. So I have project that relates to other languages. French, I will never write poetry in. Like, I cannot text my friends in French, let alone write a complicated poem in French. So I'm sorry. And also to all the people that are like, oh, no, French is so beautiful. No. No offense to French, but...
No.
No offense. But, like, it's always from the outsider point of view. You know, people say, oh, Arabic is so scary. Arabic is beautiful when it can be. Russian is beautiful when it can be. And French can suck when it wants to be. And for my case, it's all the time.
I think that's language in general. I mean, any language can be beautiful, and any language can be terrible. It all depends on the words that you use in the language, you know. I mean, every language has words that are both, you know, hateful or hurtful, and words that are beautiful. That's...
I only posted one poem that has, like, no, it wasn't a poem. Sorry, it was a quote. It was inspired. I was in class, and our Arabic teacher was, like, speaking, and she referenced a quote from a poet, and that quote was in Arabic, and I heard it, and I thought it was so beautiful, so I wanted to share it with people and put it in English. So the quote was, it wasn't a quote, it was just, like, a beautiful line, and it was in a story, and the line was, "Tabban li dalik al asfari dil wajhaini kal munafiq," which means, it doesn't translate to, but I tried to translate it, and it translates to, "Damn to that double-faced yellow like a plaster saint." What it talks about the money, the coin. So, like, they took a coin, and it has like a double face. So the author compare it to a plaster saint. And I thought that was so beautiful. So it's the only translated thing that I have on my page. But I will have more things.
Interesting. Excellent. That's awesome. That's fantastic. Yeah, like I said, I was just curious because that's amazing. You know, I'm one of them people. I only know one language, and sometimes I don't even know my language that well.
Oh, reminded me. I'm actually learning fourth language. I'm learning Dutch.
But okay, stop bragging. Time. Now you're just bragging.
Man, no, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no.
I really love languages.
Well,
I'm so sorry.
I would hope so. I mean, you go by BIW, which is beauty in words. So if you didn't love language, you're probably in the wrong, pursuing the wrong thing.
But you know what? Like, you're saying this, like, you're complimenting me how, like, I know three languages, learning a fourth one. I have friends, like, most of my friends are bilingual because they also were taught in school three languages, like, it was mandatory. When they hear this, if they hear this podcast, they're gonna be like, I don't want to curse, but they're like, frick you, we know three languages, three not special. I'm not trying to be so. And that's the thing. I have American friends, and when I tell them, you're American, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, but there is something wrong in you guys' educational system, because you guys only learn one language, and where I come from, you have to learn three, or you're not, like, qualified for work or stuff.
Yeah, our education system, I think, has a lot to do with our political system and in the trying to keep people dumb. That's
I'm
a
so
lot
glad
of it. It's
the last part. I'm so glad this is the last part of the podcast, because if we started talking about politics, this won't end well.
Yeah.
This won't end well. So I'm happy it's the end.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But I totally agree. Our educational system is crap. They've been using the same educational system for so many years, and I've actually, for classes that I've taken, I've actually written papers about our education system, even though I'm not an educator myself. I'm just a person looking in, but I've did papers.
Irony. Reading a paper about how sucky your educational system in a school where it teaches your educational system.
Yeah,
that is irony.
Yep, well, secondary education, so that's the papers I wrote were for my college, so but still. Yeah, research papers, but I totally agree with you. Our education needs to lag. Like, even, you know, when I was in high school, we were required to learn a foreign language. You could either learn Spanish or you could learn German, and I took the classes, obviously. I took German, but I, not necessarily saying they didn't do a very good job teaching, but I definitely, as a student, didn't do a very good job at absorbing and retaining the knowledge. And that's partially on me.
Again, as I said, like, actually, it's funny when I think about my three languages. I was born around Arabic, right? I was born around Arab people and people who naturally spoke Arabic. So school didn't really put that in my head. When it comes to French, it's the only language that I let school teach me, and it failed me. And then when it comes to English, I was like, fuck it. I said I was not going to curse, and then I cursed. Never mind.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So because I don't want you to censor stuff, and I don't want to, like...
Oh, I don't censor curse words. That's on you.
Well, you should have told me that first time. Whatever.
That's okay. You've cursed multiple times, and I haven't said anything because I don't care. You think your few curse words or anything? I usually talk to comics, so.
Oh, that's
this is
true.
This is clean compared to.
That is true. I'm so innocent. I was like, oh no, I cursed, and then he probably talks about, like, dicks or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, very mild. You're.
But yeah, my point is, it's kind of funny now that I'm rethinking. English, I self-taught myself. Arabic, I was born with. And the only language that I let other people teach me was French. It failed me. So I take my stuff back. My school didn't also did a good job at languages.
All right, well.
I take it back. We're even.
No, there we go. We're even. That's a good way to end it, being even. I like it. So where can people find your work and follow and support your journey and your art?
Yeah, mainly on Instagram. Like, all my poems, like I said, they're on Instagram. They're really wonderful. If anybody is looking for, like, if you're sick of, like, very modern poets that only have four lines, no rhymes, if you also don't want to go into, like, the Shakespeare route where it's very complicated, very old English, and you feel, like, kind of bumped out, go to my Instagram. That's what I'm trying to say. Go to my Instagram. You're going to find lovely, lovely pages. I have Twitter, but I don't post my poems there. Just, like, funny little. And I have a TikTok also where, like, I take my poems and I give them a really beautiful background, and it's basically a spoken word on TikTok. But yeah, mainly my Instagram.
And your Instagram is?
Beauty_in_words. That's BIW.
Perfect. And that will be, and that'll be in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me today.
I had so much fun. Thank you so much.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you.
Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production. Hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.